Well, hello everyone. I recently saw this clip from LBC. The dog-faced gremlin, James O'Brien, took a call from a woman called Farah, who has grown up in Britain. She, I think, is from a Pakistani background. And it actually threw up some interesting questions that I don't think people talk about enough. I've called this video, "Is Integration Really Better Than Multiculturalism for Society?" And the reason I called it that is because among the Tory boys, the centre-right types, there's this kind of assumption that the thing that we should really be aiming for is a common culture that, yes, whether you want to reduce immigration or not, there are a lot of people here already, so the reasoning goes. And the problem really is not that they're from a different background, whether ethnically, it doesn't matter if they're a foreigner, basically. What matters is that they're not integrated. That's the argument that we get. That's the stated position of practically everybody. On the center right, and it's also the position of the people who really focus on Islam a lot as well. Somebody like Tommy Robinson, for example, has that as their position. Now, perhaps controversially, I have the opposite view. I think that multiculturalism is actually perhaps better than this notion of integration. And I think this clip is going to help illustrate why. But also, I think that if there are going to be distinct groups in a country, it's actually better that they remain a distinct group, right? It's better that they have a sense of themselves as being separate and different, and that the local population have a sense of themselves being. These people being a distinct ethnos and a distinct group. That is actually what multiculturalism means. It is, I've been working on this Foundations of Shakespeare course, and one of the plays I'm covering is Othello. Well, one of the things that has always struck me about Shakespeare and his treatment of race in Othello is that he sets the play in Venice. And of course, he has another play set in Venice where there's also a character who's different, Shylock. Now, Shylock in The Merchant of Venice has a dream of multiculturalism. That is, he's prepared to abide by the laws of Venice, to the letter of the law, etc., so long as they allow him to carry out his business, which is in money lending, but all his friends are Jewish in The Merchant of Venice. And he's pretty proud of that. He's like, well, I don't want to be hanging out with the local Venetians. They're not my people, right? I don't want to become a Christian. I want to stick to my own. That's Shylock's attitude in The Merchant of Venice. And it becomes a plot point because his daughter, Jessica, gets involved with one of the local youths, and Shylock is like, no, I don't want my daughter going out with, one of them, essentially. I'm going to stick to my Jewish quarters with my Jewish friends. I'll do business with these people, but we're separate. That is Shylock's attitude in The Merchant of Venice. Now I'll come back to that in a second, but Othello, who is a Moor, which means that he's probably from North Africa, quite a lot of debates as to what specific race he is, but frankly, it doesn't matter. The thing that matters in Othello is that Othello is different. He looks different from everybody else. He is ethnically different from the local Venetians. And he has exactly the same set of challenges that Shylock has in Venice, the other play that Shakespeare sets there. Only Othello doesn't have this dream of multiculturalism like Shylock does. Othello has this dream of becoming a Venetian, of having a Venetian wife, Desdemona, of, you know, he leads their armies. And he believes that as long as he can be the best military man possible, he will be accepted into Venetian society, Venetian high society even. Othello has the dream of becoming, you know, a man of Venice, a kind of cosmopolitan, if you want. He even converts, I believe, even though he's a Moor, he becomes a Christian. And, of course, the race becomes a problem. Desdemona's father, Brabantio, isn't really up for the marriage. And the authorities in Othello actually side with Othello. They say, well, look, you've been a good guy, Othello. You're good at your job. Why shouldn't you marry Desdemona and, you know, be a Venetian? Well, I don't need to go into the ins and outs of it, but by the end of the play, Othello, well, his life is destroyed. And both Othello and Desdemona end up dead at Othello's hands. So, you know, and what I'm saying is that Othello's dream of integration is utterly destroyed by Shakespeare. Now, it just so happens that Shakespeare destroys Shylock's dream of multiculturalism too. But the question is, if it's between the two models, integration and multiculturalism, is integration necessarily the better one? Okay. Now, with all of that said, I'm going to play this clip from Farah on LBC. It's only about a minute long, but I think it gives us a lot of food for thought. There's a lot of stuff that this clip, I think, brings up that people need to start thinking seriously about if they're serious about, you know, repatriation, if they're serious about, you know, you often see people talk about how they have to go back and all of this. This is rhetoric, but if it's actually to become a reality, a situation and situations like the one I'm about to play are going to be repeated thousands, millions of times. And yeah, let's just watch the clip a second and then I'll come back to, you know, some thoughts about it.
Especially what Jenrick is just so blatantly saying now is exactly what, unfortunately, my mother said to me when I was 10 years old. And there's real heartbreakingness as well, because when I was 10, I was, you know, studying for my 11 plus, and she said, Farah, don't ever think that you know, everybody else is going to think that you're just like them. She said, your white friends, you know, the white population, they will not accept you as equal. You are not. So you are going to have to work much harder, make a career for yourself, and make sure you have a skill, because they've let us in and one day they'll kick us out. And those words to me at 10, I mean, I'm 48 now. Yeah. And they've carried with me my entire life. When we have family coming from Pakistan who say, oh, well, you know, this is the way it's happening in the UK and how, you know, people like us are being treated. She says, I don't care. This is my country. This is where I live. This is the country I love. I am British. And the bizarre thing is that the words that she said to me 40-odd years ago are now coming back to haunt me now. I have made decisions about my children and almost masking their identity to a certain degree.
So this is very interesting, isn't it? And it's also kind of quite sad in a way. Farah's mother 40 years ago had, obviously, as a first generation immigrant, a very strong sense of her own ethnic identity, a very strong sense of the fact that she is Pakistani, okay? And she tried to imbue some of that ethnos, I guess you'd put it that way, into her daughter. You know, she tried to warn her, like, listen, doesn't matter what these people say, you're always going to be kind of an outsider here. And, you know, they may want us now, but at some point, the local population may change their mind. So this isn't forever. And we may have to go home at some point, okay? she actually had a much more realistic idea of people and groups and migrations and cultures, okay? Really realistic, and I respect Farah's mother for having that point of view. Her attitude was basically pragmatic. Look, they're allowing us to come in. Let's make the most of it. Get a good job. So, you know, if they ever do kick us out, you know, when we get back to Pakistan or wherever else we end up, you're going to have some skills so that you can make a go of it, you know, wherever. Okay. Really pragmatic. And I respect Farah's mother for that. Okay. The tragedy of this is that Farah, you know, whether by the British state, by the school system, by the ideology of the time, by the media, by people like James O'Brien, has basically been sold, like she's been told basically to disregard what her mother told her when she was 10 years old. She has been sold a dream of integration. She has been told that because she was born in this country, or because she has a passport and a piece of paper saying that she's British, or because she watches EastEnders and drinks tea and has a you know, an English accent or whatever, that all of those things mean that she is just as British as Joe Bloggs next door, okay? That she, you know, has every right, like, that this is as much her country as it is, you know, somebody whose family has been here for hundreds, if not thousands of years, okay? That is the bill of goods she has been sold. And now reality is coming crashing into Farah's world. She's having to confront the fact that that ethnic awareness that her mother, that little bit of wisdom her mother tried to give her when she was 10 years old, had something to it, that maybe people, you know, don't just lose the things that make them distinct in one generation over the course of a 30, 40 year span. It's a nice idea, but did it actually work? So, I do wonder whether integration is a more devastating and less realizable dream than what people call multiculturalism, right? What does multiculturalism mean, right? Multiculturalism means that in a place like Hounslow, or a place like Harrow, right? Or a place, I don't know, you pick some areas of Birmingham, for example, that the people who move into those from, let's say, Pakistan or India, they all just kind of live together, and that those areas just become like ethnic enclaves where they kind of, okay, they're living here, but identifiably, that's like an Indian area now. That's like a Pakistani area now, okay? And certain people know not to go there at certain times, or you know, just people just kind of know. Those people stick to themselves over there in that corner and over there in that corner, okay? And should the time ever come where the people of this nation have a change of heart, they may think, well, okay, maybe we don't, maybe if those people in those places aren't behaving themselves, or they're not obeying the laws of the land, maybe the time has come where we have to rethink this, you know, we have to rethink. Now, that means that the situation is still manageable, because they're not only identifiable, but contained in what are, in effect, ghettos, right? So they're identifiable. And they also are a community, with community leaders who can be negotiated with, and you know, you can talk to them. That is multiculturalism, okay? So from a state management perspective, or from an empire perspective historically, multiculturalism was actually a way to manage multi-ethnic populations, okay, historically. integration is a much more difficult knot to untangle, right? How are you going to tell Farah now that she is not British? She, like, that's a really hard thing for her and her family, presumably her kids as well, to come to terms with, okay? Because her whole life basically has been some sort of lie that she's been sold, okay? So I understand why this argument is taking place right now. And I honestly think that the integration has always been the biggest pipe dream of all, right? It's a pipe dream. You're not going to get, you are just not going to, in the course of one or two generations, magically make somebody who is from a completely different background into being British, right? And when you start thinking about it, even for a second, you know, even in that clip, she was talking about her family from Pakistan. Her family going back generations belongs to a different place. They practice a different religion. They have a different history. You know, if you started talking to Farah about, I don't know, Queen Elizabeth I or William the Conqueror or what happened to the Britons under the Romans, for example. Now, she may call herself British, but does she have a sense of connection to any of those things? Probably not. And to be honest, why should she? Why should Farah have a connection to the Britons who were here in, 300 BC? Or, you know, why should the name Venerable Bede mean anything to Farah? Her family are from a different place. And so she's going to gravitate towards things that are to do with her roots. This is natural. This is normal. But she has been, the point I'm making is that Farah, in a way, has been brainwashed by the British state and by the ideological apparatus that has been around us our entire lives. She has been told something that's just never going to be true. And now she's having this devastating realization at the age of 48 that, after all, her mother was right. That actually there is a difference between people, and that actually populations can change their minds about different things, and that the government may change their mind, and that actually history hasn't ended. So anyway, this is something to muse on. I do think that this is a difficult topic. It's very easy just to say, oh, well, okay, don't care about that, just get out type thing, okay? But this is genuinely something that the nation and every European nation that has accepted millions upon millions of people in over the past, 40, 50 years, they're going to have to face this, you know, how do you deal with the Farah? It's a genuine question. What settlement, I mean, presumably there's going to be like a, you know, if people were really thinking seriously about it, there'll be a tier list, won't there? You know, it'll be illegal migrants, criminal sorts, etc. first. But then it's like, well, legally, there's no actual difference between the person who thinks they've integrated, like the Farah, and the a person, you know, who's at Finsbury Park Mosque, who is also on paper British, but, you know, barely even speaks English. You know, those two people also exist, and legally they look identical. Right? So the integration people, well, on what basis are you going to say, well, Abdul, you know, sorry, mate, you've, you know, you're still reading the Quran, you've made no effort to integrate, you're on your bike, son, but Farah, you're all right. I mean, how, like, there's just no way to even start that comment. Like, how do you even quantify that? How do you administer it? Would you start, like, just giving people tests, like Gordon Brown started to try to do? So this is really why I think that more thought needs to be given to this notion of integration, right? Because you're setting up people for, like, you're not only setting up the country for failure in the long term, but you're setting up people, like, you know, she has made decisions. She's tried to build her house, right? Her foundations, her family. She's tried to make choices based on something that's quicksand. You know, she's basically trying to build a castle out of sand. And that's what the country as a whole is trying to do. Because, you know, it's a lie to everybody. So, yeah, I mean, I did have a certain degree of sympathy for all of these people that the British state is essentially lied to, as well as, of course, the native population who have been lied to ad nauseum as well. All right, that'll do for now. Do pick up a course at the academic agency. Promo code SHORJAN gets you 25% off. And well, given that it was a kind of heavy video, I'll play us out with that to try to get the spirits back up. Yeah, super interesting though that these sorts of conversations have started to happen, because even 6 months ago, even a year ago, these sorts of things were not making it to air, and now they are. It's just fascinating. All right.
Sure. Yeah. Sure, 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 sure. And so, sure.
Sure, Jan.
Can you command a comma like Joseph Conrad?
Sure, sure, sure,
sure, sure, sure, and sure, Jan.
Are you magnificent in your mastery of marginalism like Murray Rothbard?
Sure.
Sure, Jan.
Are you legendary in your logical leveling of lamentable loquacity?
Sure.
Sure, Jan.
Come on down to the January sale at the academic agency. Promo code SHORJAN for 25% off. All this January, I got more courses than the Queen had horses.
Sure, Jan.
I got better rates than Andrew Tate's ad mates.
Sure, Jan.
I got better deals than Lizzo's had meals.
Sure.
Sure, Jan.
And so, sure, 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 and so, sure, sure, sure.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.